couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's new movies include Stuber and Crawl. I'm also going to be talking about Netflix's Stranger Things Season 3 and a retro review of the original Jaws. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Silent Hill Collector's Edition and Little. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First off, we have to say rest in peace to Rip Torn. He passed away this week at age 88 years old, and he's an interesting character because of his career trajectory. You know, a lot of times when an actor makes it big, they do a bunch of stuff, and then all of their, what they're known for kind of happens in this little bubble, and even if they still are around 20, 30, 40, 50 years after they first make their splash, they're never really remembered for anything else. Or they kind of just kind of float around and don't do a whole lot, and then get a big surge, you know, later in their career, and that's when they're best known for what they do. And Rip Torn kind of did both. Now, he had kind of a tumultuous life, and I know he had some legal issues and problems here and there, but he had a career back in the 70s and I think even into the 60s, and then had some troubles, and then he did a Larry Sanders Show, which gave him a big career boost back in the 90s, which then was followed up with stuff like, you know, of course, he did Men in Black and the subsequent films. And he also did the movie Dodgeball, which is probably one of my favorite roles that he does, because he was kind of game for anything. He wasn't one of those stuffy actors who's like, well, I'm not going to reduce myself for this character. No, he'd be happy to play Patches O'Houlihan, who drinks his own urine because it's sterile and he likes the taste. You know, that's one of the kind of roles that he's known for. And that's kind of why I found a certain degree of respect for him. And he kind of had that big surge at the later in life. I mean, then he kind of, you know, and then he faded away a little bit because he was getting into his 80s. But there's a lot of respect for him as an actor, even if he had some tumultuous problems on the personal side of his life. So rest in peace, Rip Torn. Another rest in peace goes to, and don't laugh, this is a real thing. This goes to Stuart. The actor name is Stuart, and it's a four-legged actor. He is best known for playing Cheddar on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's a corgi, and he was 13 when he had to pass, and it was announced by his owner, who put it out on Instagram to let people know, the fans of the show. I mean, I watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine when it was first running, and then I recently have been binge watching it over the summer with my son, who's 11. And we get a real kick out of it. It's a great little show. And they do have a real click to this. Of course, Cheddar was the dog of Captain Holt and his husband. And I don't know whether they're going to recast Cheddar or whether they're going to work that in. I would not be surprised if they work in the death of Cheddar into the show itself, because Brooklyn Nine-Nine has been known to draw from people's personal life and merge that with the character. They certainly have done that with Stephanie Beatrice's character, Rosa Diaz. They brought some of her own personal elements of her life and put it into the character. Not the more violent ones, but other things. So it's sad to see. Cheddar was an adorable dog. And, you know, dogs, in a lot of ways, dogs are better than humans. So, you know, sad to see him pass. The final piece of news I want to hit really quickly is in regards to Jason Momoa, who some people are trying to, I guess, body shame. I wouldn't want to anything shame Jason Momoa, because he looks like he could punch anything through a wall. Apparently, there were pictures that circulated where he was at the pool or at the beach. And, you know, of course, he was in a swimming trunks, but he didn't have that ripped cut Aquaman body, the 0% body fat body. And people are like, oh, Jason Momoa got fat. No, first of all, he did not get fat. He did not pull a fat Thor on this thing. And this is also not like Steven Seagal, who was lean and mean in the '80s. And, you know, by the time he's still making movies, he's like eating a ham sandwich while he's pretending to do martial arts. Jason Momoa just lost the super cut look. He is still in great shape. He still has massive muscles. His bod, it's not even a dad's bod. It's a bod that was like 80s action hero bod. I mean, not Schwarzenegger or Stallone, because back then they always used the Nautilus and they cut themselves really, really fit. But I mean, you're talking like, I put his physique up against like Chuck Norris's any day in his heyday. I mean, come on, Jason Momoa is not fat. He's not even close to being fat. And this is somebody who's fat telling you that. Look, when Jason Momoa starts looking like me, when I end up sitting down next to him at a junket and people mistake me for Jason Momoa, that's when you can shame him for being fat or congratulate me for my cut awesome bod. One of the two. That may happen sometime in the future, but you know, lay off Jason Momoa. You don't realize what you have to do to your body, what you have to deny your body in terms of food to get to that Aquaman look. He probably spent months eating carrots and tuna fish and that's it. You know, let him have a piece of cake now and then. And it's okay if it's a dad bod. He's a freaking dad. That's okay. Jesus, ladies. You'll get another Aquaman movie and then you can drool over him. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two movies I want to look at the trailers on, and the first one actually comes out later. It comes out next March on the 27th, and that is the live-action version of Mulan.
Quiet. Composed. Graceful. Qualities we see in a good wife. It is my duty to fight.
First of all, I have to say, I'm not a big Mulan fan. It came out in the 90s, and I wasn't doing reviews at the time. I wasn't really into the Disney canon at the time, so I never saw it. I think I saw it later on VHS or DVD. And it's a fine movie. It's a well-made Disney movie, but it's not your typical Disney movie. And what I mean by that is it's not a fairy tale. And I think part of the reason that Mulan has lived as long as it has in terms of in the pop culture and in that sort of Disney princess line, and why it hasn't disappeared the way stuff like Atlantis or even Tarzan or Treasure Planet or Om on the Range or any of these number of movies, even Princess and the Frog barely is remembered as a Disney movie, but it's because they can have an Asian Disney princess. I think that has helped prop it up a little bit in its memory. And it really becomes clear when you watch this trailer, it doesn't look like a Disney movie. It doesn't have the cutesy pie stuff that you'd expect from a Disney movie. It's sort of like if they did a movie of Pocahontas. You don't have the singing birds and the talking mice necessarily. So it just looks kind of like, almost looks like it's a Chinese movie that actually happens to have an English soundtrack. I mean, it might be fine, but this trailer just really didn't jazz me. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Spies in Disguise opens on Christmas Day.
Agent Sterling! Wait! I've been working on this thing at home. It is going to change spying forever. It's called biodynamic concealment.
That next generation concealment tech, you wouldn't happen to have it on hand, would you?
You just drank it. Subject appears disoriented.
Walter, what did you do?
Pigeons are everywhere and nobody notices them.
Wow, girl.
It's the most perfect form a spy could take.
This is another Will Smith movie that's probably going to do well simply because Will Smith's name is attached to it. I don't know. It still feels like a real stretch. This feels like one of those animated films that they did as an excuse and they said, well, we'll go ahead and do it. And it was a high concept thing and didn't quite work. But I don't know. I'm still not totally sold on this one, and it's either going to be a massive hit on Christmas or it's going to disappear behind everything else. And that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Crawl and Jaws.
See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with the first one for the week. And that is Crawl. A young woman drives into a hurricane to find her missing father, only to be trapped in a house with a massive alligator.
Haley, are you hurt?
I'm fine.
In less than an hour, we'll be underwater!
First of all, before I even talk about the movie, what's interesting about this film in its marketing is it was one of those famous ones that was not screened for anybody. As I understand it, there were no screenings anywhere for this. I went ahead and saw it. I took the hit. I, you know, paid my own dime for this and decided to go see it. Because you can see movies so early now anyways. I mean, that's the great thing about my job right now is they cannot show me something. I can still just go pay to go see it. And the reason they didn't screen this one, as far as I can tell, is it's a monster movie. It's a giant alligator movie. And it's directed by Alexandre Aja, who did movies like The Hills Have Eyes remake. He did High Tension, Mirrors. He's a very grisly director. He does some pretty violent and extreme stuff, especially if you've seen High Tension. That's at times disturbing. It's a great movie. It's like 15 years old or more. But The Hills Have Eyes remake is similarly bloody and gory. This one is, like I said, it's a monster movie. There's nothing more to this than a woman and her father being chased by alligators in a hurricane. But that's okay. I mean, it runs like 87 minutes long. It's a short movie. The special effects are okay. I mean, the hurricane effects, if you've seen The Hurricane Heist, it's about that level of hurricane effects in terms of the storm clouds and the water and the rain. But the money shots are of course, the alligators. And now I live in Ohio, so there are no alligators outside of the zoo in Ohio. But I've been down to Florida plenty of times. There are alligators everywhere in Florida. And now, not as big as in this movie, they're monster-sized alligators. I mean, most alligators that you're going to see in Florida, you're going to see them running around, you know, in ponds on the side of the road, sunning themselves, especially if you get down really far south and into the Everglades area. Sometimes you'll see them, they're roadkill down there. Sometimes they're crossing or they get hit. They're everywhere. And I've heard from people who've lived in Florida that you just assume any standing water anywhere, whether it's a pond, whether it's a creek, whether it's a storm drain, you just assume there's an alligator in there. And they are a prolific species. And most alligators aren't going to be a danger necessarily to full-sized people, as long as you're not sticking your hand where you're not supposed to. Where it's a problem is you do get alligators attacking pets. Pets sometimes become victims of alligators. Especially small dogs and cats, especially ones that you let roam. That's why you shouldn't. Or kids. There was that famous incident of that kid that was killed by an alligator at a Disney park because he was wading in the water that he shouldn't have, because any standing water you can assume has an alligator in it, and there was one. Now, when it comes to this movie, it's fine. You know, the scares are there. It has, in terms of being jump scares, it has a certain degree of suspense. I don't know if there's any big surprises to it, because it does kind of play its hands pretty loosely. The alligator attacks are kind of cool and harrowing. There's some pretty graphic stuff if you're a fan of horror films and if you want to see somebody get torn apart by alligators, then it's a little more realistic than Mola Ram at the end of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, so to say. But it was acceptable. It was fine. I actually kind of enjoyed it as a lark. If you're just going to go, you want to get out of the heat on Saturday, go to a matinee. You can check this one out. It's fine. I'm just going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the original Jaws right now. I revisit this usually once a year, around 4th of July. And in this film, Steven Spielberg directs Peter Benchley's classic novel about a great white shark feeding on swimmers on Amity Island.
It's all psychological. You yell barracuda. Everybody says, huh? What? You yell shark. We've got got a panic on our hands on the 4th of July.
What we are dealing with here is a perfect engine, an eating machine.
We're not only going to have to close the beach, we're going to have to hire somebody to kill the shark.
Bad fish, but I'll catch him and kill him.
Did you hear your father? On the water now!
This shark, swallow you whole.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Like I said, I catch this usually right around the 4th of July. This year, I watched the Riff Trax version of it. Not that the Spielberg version has a problem with it. It's a fantastic movie. There's a reason it's the first big summer blockbuster. That's the reason it has such a notoriety and name to it. But, you know, sometimes you want to switch things up. But I love the Riff Trax guys. And so I bought and downloaded the Riff Trax, the MP3 track. And actually, I've had it. I've had it for a couple of years. We've watched it before. And watched it on 4th of July. And what's neat about the Riff Trax stuff, if the movie's good enough, it supersedes the Riff Trax. And you can just enjoy some of the jokes they have. Because when the Riff Trax guys make fun of a movie, they're not making fun of the movie. Sometimes they are. I mean, if you're watching a movie like The Room or Birdemic or something like that, yeah, they're really, you know, turning the screws on those movies. But for a movie that's still a good movie, you can watch it and they can kind of goof around and laugh a little bit, especially if it's a thing like Jaws, which I saw Jaws in the theaters back in the 70s. I remember seeing that. And I've seen it swimming in a pool. The one thing I don't think I'd ever watch Jaws doing is they've done these things where they'll project it at a beach. I don't think I could go into the open water and watch Jaws. Or like, I think they did that with the movie The Shallows, that one with Blake Lively being attacked by a great white shark. They had Shallows and they were showing the movie The Shallows and I couldn't do that. That would just mess with my head too much. But Jaws, it's a fantastic movie and it holds up. And every time I watch it, I forget how quickly they move with this movie. You think of movies from the 70s as taking their time. You got to introduce the characters. But boy, this one, I mean, not just the first scene with the girl getting eaten at the beginning of the movie. I mean, the first scene, Chief Brody is dealing with the blowback from this and he's dealing with the mayor and he's dealing with the press and the other people in the town council and the other community leaders and the business owners. And what's so brilliant about the writing of this, and a lot of this goes to Charles Gottlieb, who wrote it, who plays one of the, he actually plays the mustachioed journalist in the movie that's sort of in cahoots with the mayor. What's so great about that is they're able to characterize these people in the movie. I mean, the second Brody's on the screen with the things he's saying to his wife and the thing he's saying to the mayor, you get a sense of who Brody is and you get his whole backstory all while they're driving along this story about the people trying to figure out what happened to this girl who died. And it's expertly put together. Same thing happens when you bring in Richard Dreyfuss and when you bring in Robert Shaw as Quint. And there's a lot of elements to it. Now, I chose this not just because I watched it on 4th of July, but I think it's a nice pairing with Crawl. And if you watch Crawl, you see nods and homages to Jaws and Jaws 2. Speaking of Jaws 2, do you know that mayor got reelected? The guy, Murray Hamilton plays the mayor in the second movie. Somehow he managed to be the negligent cause of death for multiple people, yet they still reelected the guy. That's like Mary and Barry, you know, snorting coke and getting reelected. Anyways, any giant monster eating somebody in the water has to owe something to Jaws. And Jaws is such a groundbreaking film, and it is still expertly done. And the problems that it had during the production actually made the movie better. And Spielberg should thank the fact that the shark never worked. So I'm going to say Jaws totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Stuber and Stranger Things Season 3. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, continuing on with the movie reviews and a television review. But first, we gotta continue with the movies. And the first one is Stuber. An Uber driver's car is commandeered by a visually impaired LA detective looking for a cop killer.
Please be a five-star ride.
Hey! Uber?
Yeah, be cool, be nice.
I'm Stu, how do you do?
Compton. I'm LAPD, let's go.
Or do you have a more specific address?
Compton!
Stop yelling, neighborhoods. That's not how Uber works.
Hi,
Hi.
Hi, ladies.
What the hell's going on?
You selected the Uber pool option.
Uber what? Ladies, official police business.
Get out of the car!
This is essentially a buddy cop film, even though they're not both cops. Camille Nanjiani, who is best known for doing The Big Sick. That's, I think, his biggest name. But he's shown up in a lot of movies. A lot of times he does a lot of voices. He does side characters, supporting characters. The little sort of like alien guy from Men in Black that became the sidekick to Tessa Thompson's character, he did the voice for that. And he was in the first episode of Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone reboot. He played the comedian. So he's been around for a while, and I've seen him a lot of stuff, and you hear his voice. He got a big boost in his career with The Big Sick a couple years ago, which was, he was also an Uber driver in that. I mean, I guess he's drawing from real life, because that movie was about him and his life, and he was, in fact, an Uber driver at one point. Anyways, he plays the driver, Dave Bautista, who, if you don't know who that is, that's Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy. He doesn't have all the green paint on him, but, you know, he's the big, strong dude. And he plays a basic Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Dolph Lundgren cop ripoff from the 80s or 90s. And he's this tough, hard cop whose partner was killed by a drug dealer, and he's been searching for this guy, and now he got a lead, and he had just had LASIK surgery on his eye, so he can't see very well, and that's why he gets this car. And it becomes a buddy cop film, because even though they're not both cops, they're running around doing that thing. And it's the fish out of the water, the unlikely pair. Bautista's big and tall, and Nanjiani is a small guy, and he's a little bit more of the modern, you know, I'm more about, you know, I'll talk about my feelings. I don't settle things with my fists, and I'm the friend. Like, he is the side story where there's this woman he likes, and he's always been in friend zone with her. And whereas Bautista's character is more of the gruff, just take what you want. And in that respect, it works. As a duo, they do have some very funny moments, and there are some good jokes in there. Not just everything that's in the trailer, but they do have a certain degree of chemistry. But the biggest problem with it is neither Bautista nor Nanjiani are good enough actors to really carry the film. It's like watching somebody trying to move a mattress into a house. And they really don't know how to do it. And it's kind of a mess, and they're all over the place, and they're ready to drop it. And that's kind of, I mean, they managed to get the mattress in the room, and they managed to help the friend move. But it's not a pretty sight all the time. As opposed to something like Lethal Weapon, the classic buddy cop film with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, both fantastic actors and both strong enough actors that they could carry the film if they want to, but they're also generous enough to let each other. And so they effortlessly lift that and bring it into the house. And that's the difference between a great buddy cop film like Lethal Weapon and just an okay one. And the other problem is the comedy works to a degree. Actually, I mean, Dave Bautista's got a lot of comedic talent, and I'd love to see him do more of that. I mean, if they ever wanted to do another remake of Kindergarten Cop, but he's not strong enough of an actor quite yet. And I think he's got some talent. I'd love to see him do more. And then Johnny's just kind of playing his own persona. But when they finally run out of the comedy, the biggest problem is that they fall on these just really terrible cliches that just don't work. So while it has some laughs, I'm going to have to say that Stuber still kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Stranger Things Season 3. The kids in Hawkins, Indiana face another threat from the Upside Down, and Russia this time, in the lead up to the 4th of July, 1985.
What if he never left? What if we locked him out here with us? He'd want to attach himself to someone again.
It's building something.
No matter what happens, we have to stop him.
Together.
Now it's time.
First of all, I want to address something I've been seeing in some of the reviews out there. There are these know-it-all millennial age reviewers who were not alive in the 1980s. And a lot of them are taking this thing of, oh, the nostalgia factor's just getting in the way. It's too annoying. I don't like nostalgia factor. First of all, there's nothing wrong with nostalgia. Now, if you have a movie or a TV show that's nothing but nostalgia and no characters or story, it doesn't work. That's why when they made that 80s show, it didn't work like that 70s show. That 70s show had great characters and it had a story, and you actually were invested in what was going on in these people's lives in that time, which it was a total nostalgia show. It was made in the 90s and it looked like the 70s puked all over that thing. But that's okay. It's a good show and it had good characters. And the same thing, you know, people talk about, oh, 80s nostalgia, poo-poo. Well, what do you think Happy Days was in the 70s and 80s? That was a total nostalgia for the 50s. And Laverne and Shirley was a nostalgia show for the 60s. And Back to the Future, when that movie came out, that was a complete nostalgia movie for the 50s itself. That's okay. It's okay to have the nostalgia, and it's okay for it to reek of the nostalgia. Just as long as they have good characters and story. And they do that with Stranger Things Season 3. I have to say, this is probably my favorite season of Stranger Things, mainly because the characters have been all established in the last couple seasons. And they got a couple new ones in there. The big one is played by Ethan Hawke's daughter, who plays, she gets teamed up with Steve and Dustin when they're working at Scoops Ahoy at the mall. She's new, but she fits in really well. But they've established these characters, and so then they can pair them off. And we all saw Steve and Dustin get paired off in the last season, and they work out really well together. And in this one, they bring Elle in there. Elle actually is part of the gang, because in the first season, Elle was just the crazy weird one that had psychic powers. And in the second season, she was, for most of the season, she's not even with the other kids. She's dealing with her own thing with Hopper and all that sort of thing. But you also get Hopper being paired up with Joyce again, and that's a great pairing. And yeah, they're dealing with the blowback and the emotional baggage of what happened to Bob in the last season. But one of the reasons why the Joyce and Hopper storyline works so well is because for once Winona Ryder gets to act as a regular person instead of somebody just racked with guilt and worry. Because of course the whole first season is her worrying about her son and getting pulled in all these ways and she's exhausted. And in the second season, she's still worried about Will because Will's infected with the mind flayer and all that, danger there. Well, this one, she doesn't even know that Will's in danger, and Will is trying to just have a normal life because he's never had to go through this adventure, because in the other two seasons he's basically asleep through most of it. So they play around with the characters and they pair up different characters and they do different things and they take them to different places and they really sort of develop them as kids, as actual characters. I mean, there's a whole side story about Mike and Elle being boyfriend and girlfriend and dealing with the problems that you have with middle school relationships and her dealing with Max and the two of them kind of getting together and being the two girls in the group and actually seeing eye to eye. And I think that's great. And yes, there's tons of nostalgia. I love the references to New Coke. I went and I bought New Coke online because I'm an idiot and I want to spend $20 for two cans of New Coke. But I love that stuff because I remember that when I was a kid in 1985. I remember what a big deal. So you can't sit there and say that this stuff was, oh, this is just stupid nostalgia. No, this was pervasive in the culture, just as now. Now everything's pervasive in the culture with, the Marvel movies and Star Wars and iPhones and Kardashian. You can't go anywhere without learning about Kardashians. If you do, when they 30 years from now, when they make a movie about 2019, that's not a Blade Runner film, it's going to be about all that garbage. So yeah, for somebody who was 13 in 1985, 4th of July, this hit home. I thought it was the best use of the characters, and I thought it was the most breezy, binge-worthy season of Stranger Things yet. It's totally worth checking out. Totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the box office and the home cinema roundup featuring Silent Hill and Little.
Turn around. Look at what you see.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. One thing I want to talk about really quickly before I continue on with the show, with box office and the home cinema roundup. I wanted to do a little quick plug, because I know the boss at this whole place, for my new podcast I'm doing. If you already subscribe to the Fat Guys at the Movies podcast feed, you should still get this. If not, you can go look for it yourself. If you're listening on the radio, go to iTunes or what, Apple Podcasts Now or Google Play, and you can find the new podcast I'm involved in called Chubby and Stick. And it stars me and another guy named Sterling, who's well known in the tri-state area around Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky. He does a lot with WLW down there. We got together and started doing a show with, which is just us talking about absolutely nothing. It's like the Seinfeld version of a podcast. The reason we do that is that you want politics, you want sports, you want news, all that crap. So you get us all over the place. We're not here to try and solve the world's problems. We just want to make sense of it. And so this is the two of us talking about everything and nothing. But I've been doing a call-ins with Sterling for years on WLW, and generally the best times we had is when the show completely derails. And that's what this is. This is 10 to 15 minutes an episode of complete derailment, just going everywhere and nowhere, and it's a lot of fun. It's very funny. You can check that out. Like I said, you can go to the Fat Guys at the Movie site and get it, or you can search Apple Podcasts or Google Play or anywhere you get your podcasts for Chubby and Stick, and you'll get a chance to listen to it. It's quite fun. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Last weekend, Spider-Man Far From Home did perfectly well. It was a big hit. It made $185 million over the course of the, what, like 6 day weekend? Can we call that a 6 day weekend? Why don't we just say it was during the week? Because it opened on like the Tuesday, and that goes to the next Sunday. So it basically was 6 days. But still, $185 million, that's not as much as Captain Marvel made. It's not as much as Black Panther made or even the Avengers movies made, but it did pretty well. And it got a goose from being the first Marvel film after Avengers Endgame, which, by the way, Avengers Endgame is still technically in the top 10. It came in at 9. And this is a movie that is just struggling to try and beat Avatar at the box office, to the point I think they're still trying to do another re-release of this just so they can do it. Because right now, the all-time box office is Avatar worldwide, and it is only 15 million away is how far away Endgame is. So I think they're going to try and re-release it. Who knows? Maybe they'll try and re-release it at Christmas as well. They need $15 million over the course of the world just to beat Avatar. But anyway, Spider-Man Far From Home did incredibly well. It did so well that it is, by now, I think it is above the last, in terms of domestic box office, the last Amazing Spider-Man, the second one in that one. So it's doing very well internationally. For as much as everyone says, oh, superhero movies are over, nope, because Spider-Man Far From Home is doing quite well, and that's a superhero movie. It's like I talked about earlier, it has to be a movie people want to see. And people, it's not just a Spider-Man movie. They want to see more Marvel movies. Toy Story 4 broke $300 million last weekend. Midsommar got about $11 million for the whole 6 day weekend, which isn't bad for as fringe of a movie as that is. I mean, it's not going to hold well, but it's bizarre. But it's enough to actually justify A24 giving it a wide release. And of course, Aladdin's well over $300 million. It was a good week for movies last week, and then that's going to be more than you can say about this week, because it's probably going to be a little bit slow, and Spider-Man's going to win again. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The first one I want to hit is Silent Hill Collector's Edition from Shout Factory. Shout Factory doesn't just pull out some super old stuff like the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. This movie's only about 13 years old, but it's enough that it has enough of a following to warrant a collector's edition. A woman takes her adopted daughter back to the mysterious town of Silent Hill, which is haunted by violent and disturbing demons.
Christopher, Sharon's gone. I need your help.
I'm not okay. Please, hurry.
Fire started 30 years ago.
Dad! I don't know what's happening. Do you know what's going on here?
This place is completely cut off.
Only the Dark One opens and closes the door to Silent Hill.
I remember when this movie came out, I was actually reviewing films when this film came out, and I saw it. And the thing is, I'm always conflicted with this movie because it's a video game movie, and video game movies never do well with the story. It's always a bad plot. Because video games are concept-based, and then you kind of go through these worlds, whereas movies are plot-based and character-based. And by their nature, video games kind of have to be open-ended because that's what makes them interesting. That's what makes them work. With that said, Silent Hill has great imagery. And I've never played the game. I'm not a gamer. But as I understand it, the adaptation from video game to movie really retains the creepy, unsettling, unnerving look of the characters and the ghosts and the demons in there. It's iconic looking. And while the story's not great, and I even went back and looked at my original review, and that's essentially what I was saying. It's not a great story. It's about this religious cult, ultimately, but the world in which it inhabits is visually stunning. And even for the 2006 special effects, it's a little bit gooey with the CGI and the computer emulation. It still is, it's an effectively looking movie. It's one of those movies I could rewatch multiple times simply because of how it's put together and how it works. So I'm impressed with it, even if I will be the first to admit that the story is kind of weak when you come down to it. Now, the collector's edition comes as a two-disc set, and you've got a high-def master for the new film, so it looks brilliant. It looks gorgeous, and it has a new audio commentary with the cinematographer. Now, the whole second disc has a ton of new stuff. It's got an interview with the director. It's got an interview with Joe Dallaferland, who plays the little girl in it, the one that's on the poster. They also have an interview with one of the actors from it and the makeup effects artist. And then they have a bunch of, like, a documentary and a making a featurette and photo galleries and on-set interviews. So there's plenty of new stuff in there. I mean, most of these interviews are new, and I mean, new in the sense that, you know, the movie's only 13 years old, but they've gone back and talking to the people looking at this thing more than a decade later. And this is a movie that I think is going to live longer than, like, its sequel. It's not the greatest movie, but I still got to say it's impressive. So I'm going to have to say Silent Hill, the collector's edition, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Another new movie this week that's out on DVD and Blu-ray is Little. In a reworking of the film Big, Regina Hall plays a high-powered executive who becomes a tween overnight.
Taking the boss ladies on a warpath this morning.
Every morning. I really think I could help this company if you just gave me a chance.
Just concentrate on being my assistant.
Were you always mean? I wish you were little.
What in the black Jesus? Y'all
gonna make me do. How did you go from this to this? You went to bed grown and then you woke up little.
That's for white people, because black people don't have the time.
This was a cute enough movie. I didn't think it completely effectively worked for what it was trying to do. It's impressive because the girl who plays the young version of her, she ended up becoming an executive producer on the film, which I find interesting. She's the youngest executive producer ever because it was her idea to do Big, but do it in the opposite direction. And overall, I think it's a cute movie. It's not great. It's a little bit of a throwaway film. I like Regina Hall. I think it's nice that she's still getting work and still getting sexy work. I mean, not to sound like I'm dismissing and that only attractive women have worth, but I mean, she's a woman. She's 48 and she still looks phenomenal for 38. She still looks phenomenal. So, I mean, it has some funny moments and the bonus materials, it's got some decent stuff. It's got like a gag reel and some interviews and some behind the scenes stuff and plus a feature commentary. So it's not completely empty and devoid of extra stuff more than just the movie, which makes it a little bit better for the choice of buying versus of renting, you know, if you want to have a little bit more time with the disc. Overall, I thought Little was cute. I'm going to give it, you know, I can't remember what I said about it when I reviewed it before, but I'm going to give it a kind of rocks with the DVD and Blu-ray as well. It's certainly a nice sort of like semi-family afternoon watch. It's worth checking out.
It kind of rocks.
Additional releases on DVD and Blu-ray this week include Pet Sematary, High Life, After, Mothra Special Edition, Waterworld in 4K, and then Gotham Season 5, and The Magician Season 4. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about the Lion King remake. And until then, have a fat time at the movies.